Hello and welcome to Sustainable Warwickshire, a podcast talking about all things related to climate change and sustainability across the county of Warwickshire.
Hello, I'm Steve Smith, a director at Warwickshire County Council, and I lead the council's programme of tackling and adapting to climate change. I'm your host of this new podcast series, Sustainable Warwickshire. We hope to have some of the things being done to fight climate change and support biodiversity from across the county and give you some ideas of what you can do to play your part too. In this episode, we're going to be talking about an approach to reducing waste called the circular economy. This is a term that has been around for over a decade and relates to the protection and regeneration of the Earth's natural resources. In recent decades, us humans have taken a linear approach, best described as take, make, waste. We take natural resources, we make something with it, we use it and then throw it away. But this approach is using up the finite resources such as minerals, metals, and fossil fuels. It also creates pollution and damages our natural habitats, harming biodiversity. So we simply can't continue in this same way. Instead, a circular economy focuses on minimizing waste and keeping products in use. It reimagines the production of objects so that materials are reused and recycled back into the cycle as much as possible, keeping waste to a minimum. The move to a fully circular economy will mean a complete rethinking of design, manufacturing, and usage on a global scale. But today we're going to focus on just one small part of that cycle, which is how we can keep products in use for longer in Warwickshire. So I'm going to say hello and give a warm welcome to my two guests today, Sharon Maxted from Kenilworth Repair Cafe and Martin Bryant from Rugby Repair Cafe. Sharon, let's start at the beginning. What is a repair cafe?
Well, the first thing I'd like to say is we're not the repair shop, which is sometimes an expectation that we meet. We are not an intensive care unit followed by a long period of rehabilitation. We would describe ourselves as more A&E. We will look at something for 20 minutes, half an hour, and hopefully work out whether or not it can be repaired or not, and if it can, what we can do about it. It's free where we meet for people. There's no charge for our advice or the repair. And it's all about sharing experiences, getting things repaired rather than going to waste. The volunteers come in with their own tools usually and with a fabulous array of expertise, bar none. And there's always tea and coffee because the word, you know, the description is it's a repair cafe. We do have heavy emphasis, so people are generally very content to wait because they get tea, refreshments, and they can see what's going on. The whole idea is that you stay with your repair and you see what is happening. And there's thousands of them around the world now, we're very happy to say, and it's a growing thing in the UK and more of it.
Superb. Thank you. Martin, and it's a completely free service for people to use?
Yeah, everybody who comes along is a volunteer, the organisers and the people who do the repairing and the hosts as well. So our expenses are very minimal. In Rugby, we get the location for free from the church. So all we do really is pay for a few bits of equipment to help the volunteers and some insurance to make sure that, you know, we don't harm anybody. And if we do, we can be covered by insurance. But yeah, we ask for a donation on the way out if you're happy with the service, entirely voluntary. And those donations just keep the insurance ticking over. And as I say, very, very few other expenses.
Thanks. Thank you, Martin. And just to follow up with you there, you mentioned volunteers. How many volunteers do you have at the Rugby Repair Cafe and what made you get involved in it?
It started back in 2019. A friend of mine, Lee, she got together just with a group of about 30 people and said, wouldn't it be a great idea if we have something to help do repairs in rugby? And after that meeting, we got down to about five people who were actually committed to doing something. And we set up the Repair Cafe. So, yeah, the five of us got together. We've now got approximately 30 volunteers on the books, you know, my little contact list that I email out every week to say, every month rather, to say, yep, are you going to come along this week? On average, I think we have about seven volunteers to fix things at each event. We also have one or two people who come along just to host and to book the people in, to show them to the repair, the appropriate repairer who's going to fix their item, and just to be a bit more sociable rather than just, you know, next and move along the line. So, yeah, we have 30 registered volunteers. We're always open to new ones. Nobody's committed to coming every week. You come when you want. And so, yeah, it's entirely volunteer based.
And it's amazing, isn't it? You talk about quite a small group of like-minded people can grow into such a large global movement, as you mentioned, Sharon. And what about in Kenilworth, Sharon? How long has the Repair Cafe been going there? And why do you feel passionately about the Repair Cafe approach?
Well, much like Martin, we got together in 2019 when we became aware of this organisation. As a family, we have recycled, repaired, and think, you know, like forever. Do you remember back in the day when you used to collect your newspapers and take them down to the newspaper bank and you sorted your bottles into green, white and brown? We've been doing it forever. However, in 2019, we became much more aware of this organisation. And we gathered a group, much like Martin did, and we found our core repairers and our meters and greasers and the other people that make the cafe work. And we were set to launch in March 2020 when something happened, and that stopped us in our tracks. So we eventually got going in September 21. So we've been going over a year now. And we just felt that we just wanted whatever small difference we could make to bringing things back to a circular economy was going to be helpful. And of course, since the whole COVID thing and the financial issues now, we feel that the Repair Cafe has become even more important for people to bring this. And like Martin, if people want to donate, that's absolutely fine. If they're not in a position to, that's absolutely fine. Getting started with our Repair Cafe, we got the volunteers, we got a venue, we got all that sort of things, but we did need to get some funding to help us start up. And County Council Green Shoots Fund was amazingly helpful with this. We put in a bid so that we could get some banners, some sail flags, get printing sorted out, making sure that we got enough to actually set the cafe up with. And they were very generous with their funding. Kenilworth Lions helped us a little bit, and the church was very supportive in getting our rent sorted out for the first year. So it was great to have that backing to begin with so that we could get off to a flying start. So the donations just keep us ticking over. So it means that anybody in any financial position can come for help and advice. And also the volunteers give their time. They're not asked to pay any expenses. We refund everything for them.
Yes, and you're right. I think you've hinted there that the rising cost of living and inflation pressures on all sorts of goods and services, and particularly fuel, means that I can imagine that there's many of our residents in Warwickshire thinking of ways to save money, and I'm sure that's another driver for looking to reuse as much as possible. And Sharon, I'm interested, what type of things come through the door to be mended in Kenilworth?
Oh dear, we have a rule: if you can carry it in, we'll have a look at it. So we do repairs. We don't do French polishing. We don't touch iPhones and iPads and things like that. Not because our volunteers probably couldn't do it, but we don't want to take away from any of the businesses who you know, they're struggling as well. I think we get, I'll be interested to see here on Martin's opinion on this. We get a lot of electrical stuff looking at our figures for the first year that we were working. 29% of our repairs that were brought in were electrical. We do a lot of tool sharpening. Only 10% of our stuff was unrepairable. 10% we gave advice for. We get a lot of mechanical stuff, lamps. Kettles and toasters are a favourite. I think the most interesting thing we had was an Atari Game Boy that somebody found back in the loft. Now, when I did a bit of research on this, I think it was invented in about the 1980s or something like that. Might have been, no, 1970s to 1980s. And the most hilarious thing about this was it was brought in by a gentleman of a certain age. And the repairer was the son of one of our volunteers who was 12. So he was the one that fixed it.
Absolutely. I must have a look in my loft, see if I've got any old games consoles. That sounds a really good idea. Martin, an interesting collection that we've just heard there from Sharon. Is it always possible to fix everything, or are some things just too difficult?
Some things are too difficult. With ours, I haven't got the breakdown of what types of items, but I can tell you we, on average, fix there and then about 60% of the stuff that comes through the door. 20% of the things that come through the door are end of life. There's nothing we can do about it. They've probably been made in such a way that they are designed not to be repaired. That is a constant issue that we come up against. Steam irons are the worst case there, and I fully appreciate, you know, the last thing you need is electricity and water coming together, but they really are made to be impenetrable to fix anything that's gone wrong with them. And usually the item is something like the cables worn out at the hinge where it connects to the iron, and if we could have some sort of connector there where you could unclip it, take it off, put a new one on, that would be just as safe. But of course nobody has done that in the design of a steam iron. The other 20% of the items we get through are the sorts of things whereby they need a part. And so we will advise the visitor where they can get them from, what sort of price they should be paying for it. And then if they get that part and bring it back to the next event, then we'll fit it for them. So in total, we're looking between probably 70 and 80% fix rate.
We have about 50% success rate on toasters.
Toasters are fantastic. You open up a toaster and you can see the history of what these people have been having for breakfast, because they are usually absolutely clogged with crumbs, occasional bits of foil from things like Pop-Tarts that have fallen in there and shorted out. So, yeah, they can be great fun. But vacuum cleaners are probably one of our most regular items. Henry the Hoover is brilliant. We've had loads of those in. We've fixed them all. They are designed to be fairly easy to be repaired. So it's the design of the item that, you know, plays a big role in this. And that's one of the things we want to try to get to manufacturers to say, please design these things so we can repair them for the owners.
For stories, news and information on what Warwickshire is doing to reduce carbon emissions and increase biodiversity across our fantastic county, as well as ideas and inspiration on how you can get involved, visit warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk.
So one of the other things I'd like to mention is the right to repair legislation. Now, that has come in, but it only applies to electrical goods. So manufacturers are going to be required to sell spares to keep domestic electrical goods going. But it doesn't apply to anything that's non-electrical. And I think it should. I think the public needs to make manufacturers aware that they want items that are repairable. So one of the things that when we do repairs, we log what we do. We log the item was, who the manufacturer was, what the model number was, if we can get that information. And that all goes on to a big system at Repair Cafe. And that will enable them, along with other groups like the Restart Project, to produce a repairability register. And what that will do is we're hoping that, in the same way that when you buy a washing machine, you get an efficiency grading, so you know whether it's an A star and uses very little electricity, or a G and uses loads. We're hoping to get the same sort of system for repairability. So you can choose your washing machine based on how easy it will be to repair and keep going.
The global movement of repair and reuse could well lead to manufacturers thinking about how do we make this easy to repair and, you know, be able to obtain the components to do it in a very, without having to do it in an expensive way. So I should say at this point, and forgive me for throwing in a fire safety message, but I just can't help it. If you have electrical or electronic items that can't be fixed, that's anything with a plug or batteries, please don't put these in your normal bin, as they can cause fires during the waste disposal process. Instead, take them to any Warwickshire recycling centre where they have the special collection points.
Where, when we repair electrical or electronic items, especially the electrical, we have PAT testing facilities. So anything that we repair that's electrical gets tested for safety before it goes back out to the consumer.
That's the same at Kenilworth. We do PAT testing when it comes in. If it fails the PAT test, doesn't mean to say that the repairer won't necessarily look at it. It just means that the repairer knows that it has failed a PAT test. And we have a few problems. I don't know, Martin, whether you have the same thing over the winter where you have those electric under blanket things. We're always very cagey about those. Not usually very happy with them, and our repairers will actually take the plug off something if they deem it too dangerous to be returned to the person, but we will actually make sure that they can't use it again if we feel that it's unsafe.
Absolutely. And this really should give everybody listening the reassurance, you know, the professional work that goes on here by volunteers in making sure that that items are repaired and returned safely. And alongside all of that, there are some serious points here, aren't there, about sustainability and the use of our planet's resources. By repairing these everyday household items, and we're keeping them in use for longer, stopping them from being thrown away before their useful life is over. Martin, what's your view on how this is helping our sustainability and our planet's resources?
I think it is absolutely worth doing. I don't think there's any question that it's not a good idea. So, you know, why would you have an item and just get rid of it because a small component within it has failed? You should be able to say, I like this, I've been using it for years, I want to keep on using it. And with the vast majority of the items we repair, there is a small, easily identifiable part that has failed. No, it's not the whole thing's fallen apart. It is the cable on an iron's gone. There's a fuse in something. There's the socket has worn off and become loose on a radio. You know, it's always these little items that are potentially could be so easy to fix if they were designed properly. And, you know, we can keep all these things going because some people spend a lot of money on, you know, certain brands of electrical equipment, toasters and kettles and things. And they will do. Nowadays, you can get kettles that take water intended for coffee to 85 degrees and intended for tea to 100 degrees. You know, and if the socket where the power cable goes in is broken, that's a 100, 200 pound item that's going to be thrown away because a 5p socket needs replacing. So it just makes absolute sense. And if you have been out and bought one of these expensive items, you don't want to go out and spend another 200 quid on another kettle because you knowing that it's likely to be the same part that breaks next time. So, you know, I think people can potentially be a lot happier keeping their original things, especially if it's something that, you know, you've either inherited or you wish to give as an inheritance item. It would be great if they, you know, one of the items we had a while back in Rugby was a lady came in with a 1950s radio saying that this was one of the few items she got left from her mother who'd recently passed. But it didn't work. And at the time we had an audio specialist, and he basically said to me, if you clean the feet and the sockets of all the valves in the radio, and there was about eight of them, and all of, every valve has about 6 to 8 feet, then it should work again. That's usually the solution. So I spent, you know, over half an hour cleaning every socket and every little foot on the valves, and lo, when I'd finished, the radio burst into life. And she was so happy that she could keep this radio, that it just made the whole thing totally worthwhile.
There are so many benefits, aren't there, Sharon, if, in terms of avoiding waste to landfill?
Yes, definitely. I mean, as Martin has used the term RIP, at least when people bring stuff into us, you know, they'll have had a good look at it. And if they genuinely can't repair it, then they know that it genuinely needs to go to landfill or the appropriate recycling thing. But like Martin, we have a very good success rate. I would say that most of ours is around 75% on our success rate for doing this. And people are so happy, you know, that we've managed to revive this item. We get a lot of food mixes and things. I don't know whether it's seasonal, some days or sewing some weeks. It's just really great that they don't have to buy the replacements. And as we've already alluded to, with the cost of living issues, then, you know, they can come in and have a look and see whether or not that product can be revived. And we're saving the natural resources, you know, with short of copper elements and all those kinds of things. So hopefully that as this becomes more of the norm and the skills are shared, that people get the idea that think about having something repaired rather than replaced, and improving our skills, our just skill sets in the general population.
I think it's also worth mentioning that all of our volunteers get a great deal of satisfaction from doing this. You know, you come in, and if at the end of the day you've fixed three items, people walk out so much happier knowing that they have successfully brought back to life three items at the end of a repair session, that they, you know, it keeps them happy for the rest of the weekend. And so that's always been my attitude, is that I love taking things apart and seeing if I can get them back together again. And that's why I got into it, because I simply enjoy doing it.
Yeah, I would agree with Martin on that. Our repairers, some of them maybe have been widowed and they've not had the greatest social outlet. And this is something where they can feel valued, and they are valued, and their skill set is valued, and they don't feel obsolete because they've got skills that all these younger people haven't got or need to learn how to get. But we have repairers of all across the age range, but it's a great social event, and I can't emphasize enough how much fun it is at the repair cafe. We have a good laugh.
Yes. And I think it's also worth mentioning that in rugby, we don't have the youth in our repair team. We do have, you know, mature adults. And we would like to change this. We would like to get younger people involved. The existing repair cafe in rugby is now, it's nicely established. We regularly have the right number of volunteers and a queue of people waiting at the door at 10 o'clock in the morning with items to be fixed. But we're keen to set up a second one somewhere else in rugby, maybe a different time. So if we're looking for more volunteers, more organisers would certainly help, and to find a way to get younger people involved, because I'm sure some of them would make excellent fixers already, and other ones would be keen to learn. And so, you know, if we can get people at a much younger age interested in keeping this stuff going, it'll serve them well for the future.
So that you've both taken us through quite a wide range of benefits here, not only because it's sustainable activity and it helps people to keep items going with having to pay and afford new items, the community benefits, the fun that you talk about, Sharon, the sense of achievement that you mentioned, Martin, about, you know, bringing something back to life, huge benefits. And you've also hinted there about, you know, where your organisations could go to next and infuse the next generation to have the skills to be able to repair what looked like items that could only be thrown away, but actually bring them back to life. I just want to come back to that item just briefly. Obviously, there's a whole section of our population, the younger population, where we're using a lot of electronic goods these days. So be able to bring our electronic goods back to life would be hugely beneficial. I just wondered whether we'll see more young people wanting to join your movements, your cafes, and learn some skills. What do you think, Sharon?
Well, we've, as I say, a couple of them have brought their sons in. One brings a neighbour's teenage lad in. We've been approached about people wanting to do D of E service, because there's not just the repairers that you need. We're very fortunate that we have a team who do the cafe part. I have a team of meeters and greeters, so they take care of people while they're booking in. So it's an activity that people can join in. You don't have to be a repairer to do this, but we're taking this forward. It was the suggestion came through from Holland about taking it into schools, and we've taken the schools package. And we've got three schools lined up that we're just about to go to in March. And we've got the teams of repairers. The children are going to be bringing in toys. We may or may not know what toys they bring in, but then that's just part of a normal every monthly cafe. You never know what's going to come through the door. But Martin also raised a point about he just loves taking things apart. And one of the things we've become aware of is that children, or at least our experience, is that children no longer seem to take things apart and see how they work. So before we go into the schools, our repairers have actually been looking around for stuff that they can take in with the appropriate screwdrivers and bits and bobs and things like that. For the children, like we've got an alarm clock, we've got a musical toy, a few other bits and pieces, a plug, so that they can take it apart and see what's inside it and hopefully put it back together again and it still works. So that's the kind of thing that we're doing. We've got a team of sewing ladies that are going to go in, because part of the thing with the repair cafe is one of our rules is that you have to stay with the repair. The idea is that you watch and you see what glue is needed. You see what clamp, you see what screwdriver they use. And with a bit of luck, you might feel encouraged to try it yourself. A lot of the repairers will actually look on YouTube while they're there with the person with them to see how to do a repair. So it's encouraging people to have that. But as I say, we're actually going to take it into the schools to see if we can encourage the children and their parents to start looking at these things and, you know, start taking things apart, see how it works and think about repairing rather than replacing.
I think one of the big messages we need to tell is the fact that this isn't rocket science. You know, so much of the time that if your vacuum cleaner has stopped working, it could just be there's a break in the cable. And if you can just undo three screws, cut off the bit of broken cable and then reattach it properly, you've got a working vacuum cleaner again. And that is so often the case that people will bring something into us and they'll just say, you know, I have absolutely no idea what's wrong with it or how to fix it or anything. I have no idea how it works. And we will look at it and it can be so simple as you take your screw out, you see a wire's come off, you solder the wire back on because it's obvious where it came from. You don't have to know anything about what it is, what it does. You can see there's a wire come loose and you solder the wire back on and it works again and they're as happy as Larry. None of this is magic. It's not rocket science. Everybody who's got the right sort of mindset, you know, there's people who have no interest in this and that's fine. But if you're interested, that's all you really need, because somebody will help you. They will show you. You can watch it on YouTube. And then you can do it yourself. And once you've done it two or three times, you've got the confidence to do it again.
But the thing is, it's not being afraid to make a mistake. And I think if we can start with the children and encourage them and, you know, learn how to do something and just encourage them to have a go at this. And it's the same with the sewing. A lot of the repairs we get in, I'm really surprised that people can't do a simple stitch or can't sew a button on, but they've never been shown. And you know, there's this idea about fashion, oh well, it's got a, you know, the sleeve has come undone slightly, or I've lost a button, therefore I need a new one. I was really shocked to find out that I think it's some of the badges and things like that that they get in the brownies and guides, you now iron them on. When I was a brownie, you stitched the blinking things on, and it was part of your, you know, being a brownie. You had to learn how to do it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just moved so far away that if their parents don't have the experience, how can they show the children what to do? So we're having to try and reverse, not exactly reverse engineer it, but try and start with the children and move on up that way.
Yeah, because a lot of this thing is confidence, that people won't do something they've never done before. And so, you know, if you do think to yourself, I'd like to do this, I think I'm probably capable, but I'm too scared to try in case I break it, then bring it along and say you'd like to try and fix your own thing under our supervision. And then you'll get guidance, you'll get support, you'll get people with the right tools. You know, you can do it, and then you get far more confidence to try yourself. And I think that's all a lot of people need. Is the
thing with our repairers is that they will share. You'll see them darting about between the tables because they're asking, or they need a tool that somebody else has got. But there's a great sharing of their expertise, and they're learning as well. But you know, everything that we can do to encourage people to come and have a go at this, or try it themselves. Certainly, we had one case where a lady brought in two bracelets. And the repairer showed her how to restring the other bracelet and then gave her the correct stuff for her to go away and do the second one herself. And having been shown how to do it, she was fine, and she managed very successfully. And she was very proud of what she'd achieved.
And so it's not just about that repair. You are obviously giving skills back. You are providing an opportunity for people to attain these skills and the confidence, as you say, Martin, to have a go, because it really isn't rocket science. And I agree with what you say about YouTube. You know, my YouTube feed is full of people returning toys and other electrical goods, quite simple goods, back to life. And you can learn a huge amount, as well as what I'm taking from our discussion today, the huge sort of benefits, health and well-being benefits of being part of a group where this sense of achievement, this togetherness with a purpose is superb. So before we sign off, is there anything final notes from either of you about how you can get involved in your respective cafes, or to start one up if somebody's thinking about wanting to start one in their own locality? Any final thoughts?
I think we would like to have more repair cafes. People do tend to think, I think, that we have a repair cafe in Rugby and that's great, but I don't see why we shouldn't have more. There's people out there who are interested. But yeah, if they would like to get in touch with us via our Facebook page, if you go onto the Restart Project, we're listed on there, onto the repaircafe.org website, we're listed. Freegull and Freecycle, other great services for keeping things going in the circular economy. Our events are listed on there as well. So just get in touch with us if you're interested in helping out, set up a new cafe, or even volunteering at the existing one.
Any final thoughts from yourself, Sharon?
Setting up a repair cafe doesn't require just a bunch of repairers. It does require other people to do it. So there's lots of skill sets that people could contribute in. It's not that difficult to set one up. It takes a little bit of time. The hardest part for us was getting a bank account. Everything else was quite straightforward. I've done several talks at various eco fairs around here, two groups. As Martin has said, we're a very sociable bunch. So if anybody is at all interested in setting one up, we've all got Facebook pages, websites and things like that. Come and say hello to us. We'll all share our paperwork, our, you know, commonality forms, whatever you need. You haven't got to reinvent the wheel to do this. And if you wanted advice and support, I'm sure people would come out and help you. We're just as keen to get this expanded.
Thank you both. That's been hugely informative. I've learnt a lot during our podcast. If you want to find out more about repair cafes across Warwickshire, there's 7 active ones: Rugby, Kenilworth, Leamington, Stratford, Ulster, Barford and Harbury. Then go to our website, www.warwickshireclimateemergency.org.uk. Well, that's the end of this episode of Sustainable Warwickshire Podcast. Thank you to Sharon. Thank you to Martin. We've learned a huge amount, and I hope that inspires you, the listener, to think about whether you would want to start your own cafe at other times during the week. I think this is going to be hugely exciting. But thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the conversation and would like to hear more of the same, then please do subscribe, and we'll be back next month with more. Bye.